Well, good evening. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And tonight our guest is John Klar, and we're going to be having a fascinating conversation with John in just a few minutes on his book, Christian Words and Christian Actions. And I shall have to admit that initially I wasn't too anxious to put on the program. I certainly disagree, as you may well suspect, with George Bush, but I did not want to put on a program that was simply going to be attacking George Bush. On the other hand, after I had read part of the book and realized that much of this dealt with so many aspects of what was going on in our society, I invited to have John onto one of our programs, and I was so pleased that I wanted him to share his story with you. Because it's a story of a young man, an attorney, who had a tragedy in his life and eventually came to know the Lord. And of course, as he looks at what's going on in our society, he is very, very concerned, as I think we should all be. We are involved in a war in the Middle East. Things are beginning to degenerate in Afghanistan, and we never should have gone into Afghanistan. Well, those of you who have read my newsletters, and if you want the documentation for what I'm telling you, when we went into Afghanistan, why, the Afghan government had offered to actually send Osama bin Laden out of the country so we could arrest him. The Afghan government had offered to send him to a foreign country under arrest where he could be tried. They even offered to turn him over to us if we'd simply show the evidence. But we insisted they arrest every Afghan leader, every al-Qaeda leader, and turn them over to us. And we didn't want a peaceful solution in Afghanistan. And we went in there, and an awful lot of people died. But the thing is, we let Osama bin Laden get away, and that was the plan. And if you'd like to, we'll send you the article out of the Washington Times that quotes a high government official who says, our policy is not Osama bin Laden first or Osama. Our policy is Osama bin Laden last, because if we were to capture Osama bin Laden right away, how could we justify this war? And that's it. How could they justify it to the American people? Before we invaded Iraq, and this we have all the documentation on it, if you'd like to read it, that Saddam had offered to go to another country, to leave the country, rather than to bring terror and destruction to his land. And whether you like Saddam or not, I think he's a corrupt leader. But he was willing to leave the country. The Iraqi government offered to let us come in and supervise elections. We did not want that. We went in, we took the country by violence. Many of the generals were told, all we want to do is get rid of Saddam Hussein. Just don't oppose us. We're going to keep the Iraqi army intact. We're going to, bring about a stable society here. And the reason that we were able to take the country so quickly is those Iraqi generals were foolish enough to believe the word of an American president. So instead of course, maintaining the Iraqi army, we dissolved the Iraqi army, we dissolved the Iraqi police force, we dissolved the Iraqi civil service, we created the chaos that's there, we refused to adequately train a new Iraqi army, and we have the article by Major General Paul Evans, who was assigned the job of building the Iraqi army. The Pentagon, Donald Rumsfeld Pentagon, refused to give him the personnel or the equipment. And as he said, I had no personnel at all, and tried to build an army for a nation of 26 or 25 million people without adequate personnel. It's like trying to put up a tent without tent poles. And the inference is you can't do it. And where are we today? We're in a civil war in Iraq. How did that all happen? Well, we'll be right back in just a moment. Well, our guest is John Klar. John, are you there? John, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
All right, fine. I appreciate so much for being with us this evening again. And, of course, this is an entirely different audience, so you don't have to be bashful. You can talk about what we talked about before.
Praise God. It's a blessing and an honor to be with you, sir.
Well, thank you so much. And for I'm going to have you just actually introduce yourself in just a couple of minutes when we bring all of the stations back on board. But certainly the general theme of your book is the fact that sometimes there's a great deal of difference between what people say and what they do. Would you like to sort of elaborate a little on that? And then, of course, when we bring all the stations on board, why we'll, of course, get into a lot more detail about you, why you wrote the book, etc. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. Well, there's nothing novel about my statement about a fact. It's taken straight from the scriptures, and Jesus was very clear, and Paul was very clear. And it's not just a simple one-liner. This is a repeated message through the New Testament. That words are nothing, and actually the Old Testament as well. We will be judged by our actions, and we will be accountable for them. So we can have all the flowery words we want. And, of course, that is the title of the book. What I'm astonished at is how many Christians today seem to have forgotten their scripture or have never learned it and don't seem to care much about actions as long as the words are pleasant to their ears. And that's what's happening in America today.
Well, now, what do you do with the person who says, well, we're told, though, to judge not lest you be judged? You know, we shouldn't be judging anybody, you know, simply as long as they profess to be a Christian. How do you respond to that?
Well, as I think you know, that's one of the most misused misquotes in the Bible.
Yes, would you explain it to our listeners who are not aware of why that's a misquotation?
Well, because Jesus didn't, we're correct, we should not judge other people. But by that, we're told we shouldn't judge people, oh, they're going to hell. Only God knows where a man's heart is. Saddam Hussein could repent and become a Christian tomorrow. The Bible is very clear that he would be fully forgiven and would join God in heaven. So we shouldn't judge a person to go to hell. But that's different from judging sin or judging actions, which is quite different. And Jesus and Paul and the apostles are all very clear over and over and over again that we very much should judge actions. We should judge behaviors. And we have to as moral beings. We have to judge that murder is wrong and a whole litany of things that we know are wrong. So the idea of judge not to be used to excuse people from sin, I've heard it a lot here in Vermont with the civil union debate. Don't say the gays can't get married. Judge not. Well, guess what? Jesus judged homosexuality is sinful. It's very clear.
And judge not lest you be judged by the judgment you judge. And if we were to criticize somebody else, and we would be doing the wrong things, then, of course, why we would be judged for our sins as well. We're going to be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Clark. And, John, I'd like you to tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself. I've mentioned that you were an attorney, but how is it that an attorney ends up writing a book and even thinking about going to seminary? That's a lawyer today who's thinking of going to seminary is sort of an oxymoron. So why don't you just tell our listeners who you are and how it came to be that you're doing what you're doing?
Would you call me an oxymoron?
No, I said it would be an oxymoron. the idea of an attorney and seminary are simply contradictory. Of course, I know that there are some wonderful attorneys out there who really do love the Lord. Thank goodness.
Praise God. Well, normally and generally, I get quite flustered when people ask me about me personally. This book is about Jesus Christ and what he taught. But I think that what you just asked me for is a testimony. And I would bet it puts a whole different gloss on it, and I would be very happy to share that with you.
Would you please?
Yes, sir. I had spent my life without faith, and I had really been spending most of my time learning man's laws. Clearly, as a lawyer, that's what I studied for years. And when I became very ill with Lyme disease back in 97, I lost everything that I thought was important to me in this world. I had almost never even been to church. I was not a man of faith. But laying on the floor when I couldn't even get up because of the pain through my body, instead of total despair, I found God. And it led me to the Bible and to a knowledge of Jesus Christ and accepting him as my Savior. And now we do, my wife and I do a Bible teaching class, and we're involved with Bible studies with church. We're very involved with our church. My life has never been more wonderful, even as I struggle with an illness today.
Well, I think that's wonderful, and certainly, you know, we wonder why God allows some of these things to happen, and then sometimes I really believe the only way that he gets our attention is through adversity.
Romans 8:28 C.S. Lewis, I think, said that pain was God's megaphone.
Well, let's now get into your book. And, of course, the book is entitled Christian Words and Christian Actions. And, of course, you're talking about the current administration. So what are your criticisms of the administration? After all, they're pro-life, they're pro-family values. At least this is what they say they are. And certainly they have the vast majority of the Christians of this nation are solidly behind the current administration. In fact, I often find I have, I hate to say this, but much more in common, at least as far as evaluating what's going on today, with some people on the radical left than I do with some of my Christian brethren who I love very much, but I think they're just so almost spiritually blinded. They're so heavenly minded, they're no earthly good, they can't see what's going on. So from your point of view, what do you see and how do you lay this whole story out?
Well, you're right. They say they're pro-life, but we don't see a lot happening there either. If you really looked at, if we were going to judge actions, and we looked at George Bush's administration as a balance sheet, as a spiritual balance sheet, and we looked at the liabilities on one side and the assets on the other, it doesn't paint a very good picture. Now, if we painted the balance sheet of just the words, then we'd have just a wonderful balance sheet. It would be an Enron balance sheet before its collapse, I guess. But if we look at the actions, then we see a post-collapse Enron balance sheet with Mr. Bush. And I'm distraught at that. I'm not happy about that. I'm not a Democrat. I want a Christian president, too, or at least some Christian ethics in my government. I would really embrace that. But if we look at the Word of God and we look at what's happening, we see many, 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 many conflicts. And that's why I wrote the book, and that's what the book is about. If we look at America today, do we really have a national spiritual leader in Christianity? Whether we have in recent history at all, it seems that George Bush has consolidated the religious right more than any single Christian figure, more than the Pope. So he is, in a sense, our spiritual leader because he has taken Jesus and put him on his lapel and brought him in office with him. But Acts 20:29-31, Paul warns us. He said he cried day and night for 3 years, warning us, in fact, that those who had come who would be false would be ravenous wolves in sheep's clothing. I'm paraphrasing, if you'll forgive me. And Jesus told us the same thing. It's throughout, again, the New Testament. Many Christians have forgotten these teachings. So we have to separate the wheat from the chaff. And when you talk about liberal versus conservative Christians, I don't remember there being two Jesuses on the cross, one a liberal and one a conservative. There is only one standard of Christ. And the majority of American Christians today are what Tozer called, back in the 40s, vanilla Christians. They are people who say they believe in God. 86%, I believe, Americans say they believe in God. But do they believe God and take His word seriously? A true follower of Christ puts God's words first. So that's why I say it's not about me, it's about Jesus Christ. Test my words in my book, and then test George W. Bush's actions. This book isn't, one person said to me, well, you're entitled to your opinion. Okay, I am, thank you, but I thought about it. Many of the things that I'm saying in the book are not opinions. It's not an opinion the Iraq war is against Christian doctrine. It's a fact. It's not an opinion that torture is against what Christ taught. It's a fact. It's not an opinion that Jesus taught us to take care of the poor. It's a fact. So Bush could have proved me wrong before now since I've written this book. He could repent of his skull and bones connections. He could stop torturing people. But instead he keeps pushing his agenda further and further, no matter whether the U.S. Supreme Court, the American people, the U.S. Constitution, or the New Testament stand in his way. He'll walk right over them. Thank you for letting me have my long-winded response there, but I hope that that was responsive. Instead, he's proved me correct. I'd rather not sell any books and have a Christian president. But I see, unfortunately, with sadness that the more things proceed, the more he looks more like a ravenous wolf than a Christian sheep.
Well, now, how about the faith-based initiative, though? Isn't this a great thing as we begin giving money to the church so they can help people?
Well, as a concept, it might not be bad, although some would argue, and perhaps with some support for that, that it's a violation of the church and state problem. But truly, the faith-based initiative was another big promise. I believe Bush promised something like $92 billion and then actually only delivered $6 billion for the program. The fellow, I forget his name, who was an evangelical Christian who headed the faith-based initiative, quit in the first year because he said it was all fluff and didn't have any meat on the bones. And now you see them using the faith-based initiative to, like the government always does, attach conditions and try to control and dominate and influence churches. Talk about a mixture of church and state. So it's a travesty. The faith-based initiative didn't deliver, kind of like No Child Left Behind. And in the meantime, it was used as a justification to cut a lot of social programs, a lot of welfare programs, whatever one feels about that. It's pretty odd to go to war, cut social welfare programs, and then cut taxes for the rich at the same time. It's not what Jesus taught, whatever it is.
Well, the thing is, I certainly think it's totally unconstitutional, and I really fear that the faith-based initiative has bought the silence of so many Christian leaders who would rather have the money coming in than speak out and be critical of really what's going on in our society today. And this is exactly what Adolf Hitler did. He financed the churches in Germany, and he bought the support of 90% of the ministers there. About 10% had the courage to stand up against him, and of course he ended up being sent to jail, but like Bonhoeffer and Niemöller, Martin Niemöller and the others. But, you know, I do not believe that churches should ever take money from the government. I do not believe that they should have a tax-exempt status. I think that certainly you don't need a tax-exempt status to you'll be able to deduct your contributions to a church. In fact, we should do away with the IRS altogether because it's unconstitutional, and we'd be a lot better off. And then the churches could stand on their own feet, and they would not have to be worried about what they say. They would be answerable to God and not to government as they are today. Well, certainly you're concerned about torture. You know, I just can't understand why the major Christian leaders of this country can justify torture. They say, well, gee, the Muslims are terrible, and they behead people, and they chop off their hands, and they're cruel, and the Muslims torture people. So we should have a right to torture people. After all, we have to get the information to save lives. How do you answer that? How do you reply to that? When you're involved in a war, don't you have to do cruel and ruthless things to win?
Well, you have to if you're of this world, but it's not what Jesus would teach us.
All right, fine. Good answer.
It's part of the surreal America we're in today. Alan Dershowitz, Mr. Liberal, is arguing that we should torture people under the ticking bomb scenario. It's a form of moral relativism, and I'm distraught. When you ask me how I feel about that, I'm saddened that so many Christian leaders, I'm in shock. I can't believe that so many Christians, these are many of the ministers who don't realize that we don't judge our conduct by that of our enemies. It's totally opposed to Christ's teachings. It's the exact opposite of Christ's teachings. We don't say, in fact, this is something I've seen a lot in the debates going on. Many people are talking about Islam and how evil Islam is and how historically it is oppressed. It's irrelevant to us in our Christian standards. I don't care how evil they are. I don't care how bad the Japanese were or the Germans were. It never alters our standard as Christians and as Christian Americans. So our Christianity and our conduct is not determined or dependent on our enemies. If it is, we're no different than them. And we have now surrendered everything that made America great and everything that makes Christianity great. And in fact, we undermine Christianity when we show that hypocrisy to the world. We say we worship a Savior who died and was tortured for our sins, and then we go out and torture people. It's a terrible travesty and a betrayal of our Christ.
And you know, one of the things that really bothers me, John, is so many of my Christian friends have read all of these things that are being put out here. Of course, our minds are constantly being molded and changed and altered by the controlled medium, and they're telling me about how terrible the Muslims are and about how they're suicide bombers, and the only way, you know, we're going to be able to deal with all these people, you know, who want, are willing to give their lives for their a country to try to get the infidels out of the country, we're just going to have to kill them, because after all, we're over there to bring them democracy and give them a better life, and if they don't like it and they want to oppose us, we're going to have to kill them. I simply ask, there are 1,250,000,000 Muslims in the world, how many of them are we going to have to kill before we bring them the kind of lifestyle that we have here in America that we want to impose upon them, and they don't want, we may not agree with their religion, but if we're going to ever manifest Christianity, we have to act like Christians, and our nation needs to act like Christians, and our leaders need to act like Christians. And when we have Abu Ghraib and when we have Guantanamo, why? And this is known throughout the world. We have done more in the last 5 years to undermine Christian belief and confidence in Christianity throughout the world than at any time in modern history. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's John Clare, and he has a book. It's called Christian Words and Christian Actions. But your book's a lot more than simply about George Bush, because it's been a very, very short book at that point. But you go a lot into really what's happening in our society as far as law and what's happening to our laws, what's happening to our society. Would you like to sort of pick up and express some of your concerns and beliefs there?
Well, I would, and if I might, Doctor, respond a little bit to your earlier comments. Those of us that would choose a different tack than destroying Muslims, I call the appeasers lately. That's a new term, appeasement, and it's used with disdain, like this Jimmy Carter liberal wet noodle appeasement. Well, guess what Jesus would be? I think he'd be an appeaser. I think that he would try to embrace Muslims. We always succeed as Christians when we pull rather than push people. We never succeed with pushing them. And what we're doing, the mindset that says that we're just going to have to kill them all, unfortunately, is a suicidal un-Christian mindset. It has its own just reward because what we're doing is stirring up more and more Muslims in the world and moderate Muslims to become extremists and making them revile and hate us. And we will answer to that before our God. And that's what, leading into your question you just asked me now, that's what's really at issue here. My book really isn't about George Bush. If it draws people's attention because it's tied into their belief systems, great. It's a good marketing tool. And I'm trying to market Christ. Because what we have here is we have a conflict in America today between two core belief systems. One is the American myth or the American dream, the idea of America. The other is Christianity. And if the two of them conflict, and I have to choose between angering my God by being loyal to my country versus criticizing my country to be loyal to my God, then for me as a Christian, it's a pretty easy choice. It's not always clear, but it's an easy choice when it is clear. And I think many Americans right now are confused because of the media and the grayness that's being thrown out there, the arguments used to justify the most heinous actions. So I'm concerned more. I shouldn't say more. I'm concerned for all of God's children, and George Bush is just one of them. And he may be beyond my being able to reach with my book or my efforts. But the American Christians out there who have put their trust and faith, I use the word, in George W. Bush, have been misled by a false prophet who is not following Christ's teachings, is not bringing Christ into his decision-making or into this government. And those people that follow him are in peril. They're in peril for as God, as Jesus told us they would be. And he also said, Luke 17, I believe, that it would be better to be thrown in the ocean with a stone tied around your neck than to lead even one person into sin. That's why I'm upset with George Bush. That's why I'm upset with ministers who don't embrace these issues from a scriptural perspective with their congregations. That's their job. And they'll be held to a higher standard before God. They need to wake up. We call ourselves a Christian nation. Well, we're the world's biggest producers and distributors of pornography and pedophilia and alcohol and drugs and materialism and antidepressants, that we might as well send them over in boxcars to Iraq so they can handle our new culture that we're shoving down our throat. This is not how we spread the Christian word. But that's why I'm upset, and that's what the book's about.
I certainly agree with your concern, and you know, one of the big problems is the president says that, you know, he prays regularly, he reads the Bible regularly, and God has told him to do what he's doing. He's inferred that he's carrying out God's word, but do you really think that torture is what God is telling our president to do? Torturing of Muslims? I would think that, of course, we would bring them to want to be Christians, to be like us, because we manifest love. But I guess, we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Clare. His book, Christian Words on Christian Actions, it's a fascinating read. And if you'd like to enter our conversation, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Give us a call, and we'd like to hear from you. John, how can people get copies of your book?
Well, thank you, sir, because I realized I had overlooked that myself. It can be purchased directly from the Christian publisher at 877-421-7323. That's 877-421-7323. I have a website that has more information about me and about the book and the arguments, and a number of links also. That's at christianwords.com. christianbooks.us. The book is also available through Amazon.com and ChristianBooks.com, Pleasant Word Books, most distributors and Christian distributors in particular. So it's out there if people look for it. And I encourage people to look at the book not because of that it's written in some flowery style, but because of the truth that it contains. I did a lot of research in that book, and it's definitely biblically based. I hope you found that to be true. And that's why I think it will really help people work through logically and scripturally some of these very challenging and important issues that face us today.
That I agree with you totally. You know, I thought it was very well written. I thought that it was very readable. And, of course, it simply points to some of the inconsistencies in our society. You know, at one time, we did not have a lot of people who were on the streets pushing grocery carts around with their food in them. We had people who were poor. We had poor houses in every community. You know, the people who could not or would not work had a place to go, but we didn't give them, you know, food stamps and free housing and free medical care and all of these things. Yes, they were looked after. It was known as charity, and we had charity hospitals, but charity was something that was looked down upon, and people were supposed to try to get off of it. And then we moved from charity to welfare, and then we moved from welfare to entitlement. Entitlement, of course, is now people are entitled to be taken care of by the government. And now what do we see? Well, we see people, at least in my community, and I'm sure in many other communities, pushing their grocery carts with all of their belongings in them, you know, not knowing where they're going to spend the night or where they're going to sleep, you know, when the winter comes. And, you know, this is the end result of a paternalistic society that's going to take care of people. Well, let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Ray, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I have a question for John. Question is, what religion or church is George W. Bush affiliated with? Does he go to a Methodist church, or does he go to a Baptist church? Or what, and Dick Cheney also. Do they go to church at all?
No, George Bush makes a very big thing of going to church. I don't know what church it is. Do you, John?
I believe, I'm going by my cloudy memory right now, but I believe
Methodist.
It's Methodist. And
yeah, I think it is Methodist.
Italian.
Well, I was a Methodist when I was a kid. You know, I sort of raised in the Protestant church. And, you know, I can't see anything in the Protestant church that can justify anything that he's been doing. You know, I think it's horrible. I think he's become a demagogue.
So many of our ministers are supporting him, and certainly Karl Rove has regular telephone conferences with many of them.
Oh, yeah.
Mega church leaders, and they're rallying the people behind him, and the vast majority of the Christians in this country support George Bush.
Yeah. There's a man named Addison who's a lawyer who's very influential with Dick Cheney, and he's a conservative Catholic, and he has a tremendous amount of power as far as decisions are concerned with you know, ideology, national, what we're supposed to believe in, you know.
Yeah.
I find it really, really...
We're all, I think we all share your concern, right?
Yeah.
Do you have a question at all for our guest at all? It's always good to hear from you, but certainly I really don't want to talk so much about Dick Cheney, who,
yeah,
in my opinion, is a despicable human being, and,
yeah,
Chris is the real controller of George Bush.
Yeah.
Dick Cheney's the brains behind everything going on today.
Well, I was really just interested in knowing, you know, what church that Bush went to, and, you know,
He purports to be an evangelical Christian.
Oh, okay.
And when we had an opportunity of interviewing him, he proclaimed his faith and claimed to be born again, you know, in the born again evangelical tradition. Hey, thanks very much for calling.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, and again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And when we get back, why give us a call? Our guest is John Clark. And John, of course, has written Christian Words and Christian Actions. And, of course, as he points out, by your fruit shall you know them. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Video Liberty. Our guest is John Clark, and of course my concern is that as a lifelong Republican, I cannot vote for anybody who is supporting the current policies of our president, because of course they're in massive spending, massive debt, massive extension of government control over education, massive giveaways to the drug companies, to the Medicare drug law, which is not going to help the elderly, but it's sure going to be great for the drug stocks. And I see a situation evolving where I'm afraid that the Republicans are going to lose both the House and the Senate. But more than that, they're going to lose the respect and the confidence of the American people, and they deserve to, because of what they've done. And so, but that, where do you go? I can't support the Democrats. I can't support the Republicans. And I feel that very, very soon there are going to be an awful lot of people who can't support either political party, because neither one of them represents what they believe in. And I believe that George Bush has done more harm to the Republican Party and to Christianity than any other president I can remember. So pick up the story there, John. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I heartily agree. And I'm not always as outspoken as you are. You just said some choice words about Dick Cheney. I try to bite my tongue, but I think they're justified. And I think that we're facing a crisis in this country. And maybe that's good, because I think both parties have failed us for a long time. It's just becoming kind of obvious now. We can't sweep it under carpet anymore. Interestingly, fascism I've heard defined as the combination of the state with corporate interests. Now, in the fascist states of Mussolini and Hitler and Stalin, that was accomplished by a state seizure or takeover of private enterprise, of corporations. In this country, it's happened the reverse way. And I think what you're alluding to is that corporate America is now really dominating so many of our policies. It's becoming obvious. So as much as that's a crisis for us politically, maybe it's a blessing, because maybe it's time to throw all the bums out and bring in a new party, which this entrenched two-party system does not want us to do. I call it the Integrity Party. I just want somebody to tell me the truth for a change. I've been lied to my entire life by my politicians. So it's time for some truth, and hopefully there would be some Christian ethic there.
Well, I would certainly hope that would be the case, and we've seen this happen throughout the history of this nation, and certainly at one time it was the Whig Party, and they were replaced by the Republican Party, because the Whig Party had simply lost the vision that it had been created for, and when the Whig Party was gone, most Americans have never even heard it. And, of course, at one time, the Democrats were the conservative party that held traditional values, and the Republicans were the liberals, and now they're both liberals. Well, this is Arthur Stan, and our guest is John Clark. Well, John, you, of course, talk a lot about law and our laws and certainly what the courts are doing in our country. Would you like to talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's an important issue and something that you can certainly speak very well about.
Well, it's a broad subject. I would say that, first of all, I would offer you this testimony, unsolicited, which is that I spent years reading human books of laws. I read all kinds of case laws. In law school, they really throw it at you, and I did very well in law school. I'm hoping in the near future to be speaking at my alma mater, which I intend to challenge the law students there to set aside that multi-million-dollar law library and pick up the New Testament. And it will challenge them more for the rest of their lives in just those few pages than all the volumes combined in man's laws. And I say that with meaning, because when we then look at what's happening with the laws in this country, we see the government and the laws being used more and more to dominate us, to profit off of our sweat. And the biggest threat, perhaps socially, to our country today is the inequalities that's resulting from those policies. And the greed knows no bounds, and we've seen it before in our history and elsewhere in the world. And the wealth disparity that results leads to the poor no longer being content in the hope that they may sometime achieve the rags-to-riches dream. And so,
go right ahead.
And so we see a constitution that, this is an interesting subject, because I do believe in our Constitution, but the more I've studied it as a lawyer, the more I realize that long ago it morphed out of shape of what it was intended to be. It has become a tool used by those who would manipulate it to achieve their objectives. It is like a soccer ball thrown back and forth, depending on what powers are on the bench. So frankly, although I embrace the Constitution and God's truth that it encompasses, or, you know, includes, there's a danger of the Constitution itself being a false idol. It does not replace our Bible. In fact, I was watching a documentary recently in which apparently Thomas Jefferson originally proposed language in the Declaration of Independence that said, we hold these truths to be sacred. Ben Franklin, the Mason, changed it to self-evident. There are a lot of changes like that in those documents where God was weeded out a bit, as much as we see his presence there. So I keep deferring to God's laws because I will always be disappointed by man's laws. And Oswald Chambers teaches us not to look for justice in this world, or we'll just be harping and whining and feeling sorry for ourselves. And maybe that comes back to the issue about the Republicans and the Democrats, too. We're going to see a good government soon when Jesus Christ comes back, and until then we're going to have sin-cursed human governments. We're going to always have these problems. And we have a runaway government now in this country. It doesn't matter whether it's socialist or republic or whatever you want to call it. At root, government only grows bigger. It only grows bigger unless it is held back by the populace it's supposed to serve. And if it isn't, then it becomes not the servant of the populace, but the dominator of the populace. And that's kind of the cusp I think we've been on in the recent decade in this country, and that's what I think is unfolding today.
Well, of course, it was Thomas Jefferson who said, in matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution. And basically, Jefferson, and I think most of the Founding Fathers, didn't trust government. The unique thing about the American Constitution was that the power of the central government was to be limited by the chains of the Constitution so that the men could be free. Well, of course, now recently, where they're taking the chains off of the government and they're forcing them for the people. And that is the real danger. But, you know, one of the things that always, the liberal, certainly teachers, the liberal theologians, the liberal academics always say, look, I mean, the people of great wealth have got their wealth by manipulating the government, and what we've got to do is increase the power of government so that the people of great wealth cannot use government to, enrich themselves. How would you respond to that?
Wow. That's quite a question. And
well, of course, that's my job, is to come up with questions, because this is the real quandary we face.
Well, it is, and that's why it's a tough one, because it's about balance, and it's very difficult, and people will disagree over where that balance is. I contend that where government does act, it should act with equity, with integrity, and with a Christian ethic. And we see that abandoned. The idea that we need government as policemen for every dimension, well, actually, there's a certain amount of that with which I sympathize. And it's not because I'm a liberal or a conservative, it's because I recognize historically that unbridled free capitalism often leads to huge disparities in wealth. So I guess it's a matter of degree. I think antitrust laws and to try to stop monopolies and the abuses that can go on. Look at today's contracts. You can't negotiate with your phone company what your rate is or what the terms are or negotiate contracts. In today's huge mega corporation world, there needs to be, I think it is a proper role of government to be a protector to some degree of the consumer. The problem is that many of those who embrace that want to just build stack upon stack of new government agencies. Government is always looking at new areas of our lives to dominate so that it can expand its justification for existence. And so you see more and more growth. So I think it's a matter of balance. I think that government does have a role to play where it can be an effective protector of the little guy, of Americans, and that was the goal. And you're right that the Founding Fathers didn't trust government and tried to rein them in with that Constitution. Where the liberals and others run amok is just say, oh, yeah, we need government, we need big government, we need programs, and, oh, by the way, it's going to give me and my cousin Joe a job. So we see abuse, and we see too much pork, and we see the government ham-handedly getting into every aspect of our lives, which is way overboard. So I do see and I hope this is responsive to your question, I do see a role for government, not just a total hands-off, because I think that would lead us to Satan's world without any kind of protection. I think we can use government as a Christian institution to protect us without allowing it to grow to be such a huge behemoth that it swallows us.
But, of course, we have to have moral and Christian people in government there to make sure that the power is not misused. But many of our great fortunes have been made by buying the support of politicians to use the laws of the federal government to discourage competition. And, of course, here is, of course, when the government has been used time and time again to reward one group at the expense of the others. And this is really what we should, I think, avoid. What we should do is get back to the fundamentals of the Constitution. There's very little the federal government should do, and I think the other things should be handled, and the excesses should be handled at the state and local level. It's a lot harder to buy politicians in every state than just 453 congressmen in Washington, D.C. Well, let's go to Stephen in New York here. And now we've got all sorts of people calling in, so we've obviously hit a nerve. Stephen, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yeah, I think I have both. First of all, I just want to commend him for the insight of writing this book, because I think it's very timely and so important, because there is such a twist on the truth and on what is Christian and behavior. And George Bush does not follow through on what he says he is by what he does. That becomes very, very obvious. And I guess there was another concern I had, and I'm not sure maybe it comes out in the book or not, but it really seems to me that the president and his administration are really trying to get the American people, and especially Christians, to learn to hate. Hate those of another faith group simply because they don't believe the same thing, willing to kill them or allow them to kill them, rather than to have a compassion for them and saying they're without Christ, they do not have eternal life. And it reminds me very much of when I volunteered to go to Vietnam back in 1965, because I believed the government when they told me that the Vietnamese were devils that were going to destroy us, and we needed to destroy them first. And the Lord really spoke to my heart before I went over, and through a whole series of things, including temporarily losing security clearances, I was not allowed to go. Got my security clearances back, served honorably, got out of the Navy at the time. But praise God, I never put into a situation where I had to kill somebody else. And so I just wanted to inquire about that, if there's that perception that there is an intentional process of trying to create among Christian people an attitude adverse to other peoples, especially those of other religions.
All right, I think that's a legitimate question. Do you see, do you sense, John, that there is an effort to try to get us to hate the Muslims? Hate all Muslims because we don't know which one may be trying to kill us.
Absolutely. And Steve, thank you for your support and your comments. You're quite right. And in the book, in chapter 9, where I discuss Abu Ghraib, I have a bit of an aside where at length I discuss what the truth is of America's history in the Middle East, and what George Bush, the student of history, so-called, told us. He said, they hate us because we're free. They are evil. They hate civilization, they are a threat to civilization itself. All these big, grand-sounding ideological phrases. I'm reminded of Orwell in 1984, where Big Brother tells us about these amorphous enemies always changing, Eurasia or East Asia or whomever, but there's always somebody we're at war out there with, some nebulous power. In order to justify a growth of federal government power, a growth in military spending, and perhaps well-intentional, the idea that that's going to somehow stimulate our economy, which would, of course, only be a short-term boost. For those goals, perhaps, I believe this administration has very much misrepresented who the Muslims are. But most importantly, if you weren't a Christian, you could do that. There would almost be some integrity in it. If you weren't a Christian, you said, you know what? They picked me off. We got to slaughter them all now, kill their kids, and take their oil. Let's go. There'd be some integrity in that. But as Christians, there's no room for it whatsoever. So, yes, that's the, you know, the thing that upsets me the greatest is not that George Bush would incite hatred in such a way and spread misinformation in such a way. It's that Christians would so easily leave their Bibles in the back room and go red by the nose with a ring in their nose along for this ride without any reflection. That's the most astonishing and shocking thing which motivated me to write this book.
And of course, it's, this line, you know, they hate us because we're free, and yet who is taking away our freedom? It's not Osama bin Laden. It's our government that now wants to permission to tap everybody's telephone, to tap everybody's emails and faxes, and to see what books we take out of the library, and to track our finances, to track everything we do. And believe me, of course, they were doing that long before the 9/11. They just want to make that legitimate now. Has nothing to do with terrorism. All these were things that Bill Clinton wanted to get in after the Oklahoma City bombing. They couldn't get it through. But after somebody unleashed military anthrax in Washington, D.C. after 9/11, why, of course, Congress went ahead and voted for the Patriot Act. Most people had never read it. Hey, thanks very much for calling, Stephen. Let's go to Mike in Idaho. Hi, Mike. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. I love the show, the way you brought the ideas out in your book. I'm going to get that, and I want to read it. I missed the website, so after I ask my question, would you please give the website after your response?
Certainly.
In your book, you were just talking a few moments ago about law and the use of law. Do you, or have you read Frederick Bastiat, The Law?
Frederick Bastiat. Do you know that book at all there, John?
I have not read it.
It's really a classic. It was written as a response to the Communist Manifesto. It was written, I think, back in 1848. And we do carry that to our ministry. Inexpensive little book, but it was a classic book. Mike, what did you want to talk about there?
What I wanted to talk about. The use of law. You know, you guys were talking about the passage of the Patriot Act. But what is the focus of the passage of the Patriot Act? Is it to secure liberty, or is it to take away liberty?
I think it's to take away liberty.
The law has to be something used to support life, liberty, and property above all.
Right.
And so I was just wondering, in his book, did he address that, being a lawyer, talking about law, asking people to look at the Bible as the source of law, which is great. There is no better. And if he had read the Frederick Bastiat's The Law, because I believe he took the examples out of the Bible to show universal truth of law.
All right. Do you have any thoughts at all on that, John?
Sure, I have lots of thoughts. To answer, and thanks, Mike. To answer first directly, I'm not sure whether I take that issue directly by the horns, but I think implicit in the book is that all of our laws and our politics, in fact, reflect our morality. So they're all undergirded by our faith and our religion. It's just a matter of whether we recognize it or not.
Right.
And I suppose with the Patriot Act and the wiretapping, the other things going on, the bizarre things undertaken by this administration, we shouldn't be surprised that the rule of law, of man's law, is not respected when God's law is ignored. And that's what we see right now. The Patriot Act has definitely not been used to whatever protections is given us. It's taken much more away with the other hand. And now the wiretapping, and you would think the man would have enough sense, at least from a political strategy, sometimes to just quit when he's ahead and say, okay, you're right, I shouldn't have wiretapped, I'm done. But he just keeps pushing and pushing and pushing like a kid who wants his toy. And,
did you find any similarities between the Fatherland Security Act of Hitler and the Homeland Security Act of America?
Well, yes, and actually, I confess that I didn't become fully acquainted with that until later and continue to become educated. In fact, Dr. Monteith just shared some more information with me, with us on the air tonight about what was done with Hitler's Germany. Astonishing and terrifying, if we weren't putting our faith in God, how strong the parallels are. You're not allowed to say that, though. You're not allowed to make the analogy with Hitler. I say in the book, I go a little bit a step further. If you looked at and compared George Bush to Hitler and Stalin, you could say, and there were those who did with the torture, with the gulags, which used identical methods that Stalin used, and Cheney and others were up in an uproar. This is nothing like the gulags. They killed millions of people. Well, quantitatively, Bush, they're right. We're different. We're not killing millions and millions, and Stalin probably killed 30 million or close to that. But qualitatively, arguably, qualitatively, we're worse, because we're doing it in the name of Christ. And Hitler, at least later on, and Stalin didn't feign Christian integrity as they did this. So arguably, this is worse what's happening, because this is taking down Christianity around the world. This is turning so many people against Christianity. So much work done by the Mother Teresa's of this world being undermined by the missteps of one person who's just not even qualified spiritually or theologically to be calling himself a Christian leader to begin with. I'm taking off a little bit now, I'm getting a little heated up, but this is offensive to me, because my Christ is being...
Sorry about that. I just want your website, if you don't mind giving that out again.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Thank you, Mike. Go ahead, John. Yes, I'd like your website again.
It's ChristianWords.us.
ChristianWords.us. www.christianwords.us. And the telephone number is, why don't you give the telephone number again?
Yes, it's 877-421-7323.
Yeah, you know, I know you get a little worked up, John. This is the wonderful thing about talk radio. There's a tremendous emotional response, certainly on my part, on your part, and many times on the listener's part. And it's so easy to get carried away in the discussions. But, of course, what we're really trying to do is educate the audience, to get them to think, to get them to challenge what they've been told, and to realize that, if we are acting in the name of Christianity and what we're doing in Iraq today, and what we're doing in Afghanistan today, and the way we're planning it, apparently, to go to war with Iran in the near future, is this really a manifestation of Christianity, or is this power politics, perhaps with even a more diabolical agenda? We'll be back here to wrap up the program. Our guest has been John Clark. Well, John, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Oh, sure, put the pressure on. Sounds like a summation.
Just 3 minutes more because the clock determines what we do. I don't run the program. It's my clock that does. Go ahead.
Well, let me first use some of that time to tell you how grateful I am that you have me on, and what you're doing here with your show is just awesome. And it's a real honor, it really is, to be working with you for our Lord. And I hope that I've served him well today.
I think you have.
And I would point out that you're right, we should exchange ideas, and if we can't talk about these things within the body of Christ, then the body of Christ is being ripped apart along with our country over this political divide. And if people want to read my book and they think they won't agree with me, tell me how you don't agree with me. I'll change it if I'm wrong. I'm not trying to win a political battle. I'm seeking truth, and I do so in the book, and that's why I believe every Republican Christian who's read my book so far has agreed with most of it, and many of them have written to me and thanked me. They don't agree with all of it necessarily. I don't expect them to. But so the book, I've mentioned where it's available. My website is christianwords.us, but mostly I beg people who are listening, who have any inkling at all that there is a God, to look at the New Testament and to take it to heart, and then search their heart and their spirit for what God shows them about George Bush. And find truth, and do what God would have us do, and not what our country tells us in fearfulness that we should do, because fear is opposed to God. Fear is Satan's tool, and he's using it very well right now in this country and in this world.
In fact, you were talking earlier about the book 1984 by George Orwell. And one of the things in that book, there was a man named Goldberg. Now, nobody ever really saw Goldberg, but we saw pictures of him, and he was the enemy of Big Brother. He was the one that was threatening the stability of our country. And so, and of course, this is the country, the mythical country that existed in 1984. So they would keep flashing pictures of Goldberg up on the screen, and everybody would boo, because he was Big Brother's enemy. And, of course, everybody loved Big Brother. Everybody hated Goldberg. And as we look at this television screen, and we keep seeing them show the pictures of Osama bin Laden, you can go up in the internet and type in, is Osama bin Laden dead? You'll find, probably several hundred thousand sites that say he has been dead for a long time. But we see him all the time on television. We see him, there's a picture there. They showed some pictures of him before 9/11 just the other night on Al Jazeera. And everybody hates Osama bin Laden. Could it be that our minds are being molded? Our taste forms are, are concepts suggested largely by men we have never heard of? Could it be we're being manipulated, and the Christians are being manipulated right at the head of the line? John, thanks so much for being with us. God bless you, and good night.
God bless you, sir. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoyed the program. I know some of you probably don't agree, and some of you are very supporting of the president, and that certainly is your right. But let me simply suggest a book we carry. It's called Hitler's Cross. It was written by Erwin Lutzer. Dr. Erwin Lutzer is a senior pastor at the Moody Bible Church in Chicago. It's the story of what happened in Hitler's Germany and how Hitler used the church, professing to support it, But of course, created a situation where he was able to control the finances of the church, and 90% of the Protestant ministers in Germany went right along with Adolf Hitler in the Nazi movement, and of course, there many of the Catholics did as well. Although probably there was much more opposition in the Catholic Church to the tyranny than there was in the Protestant Church. Hitler's cross is important because it shows how they used Romans 13 over and over again to justify supporting Adolf Hitler, or at least not opposing Adolf Hitler. Hitler's cross is available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. I want to mention we're going to have our annual Radio Liberty Conference here on the 29th of October. That's a Sunday. The 29th of October, we're going to have Chris Pinto as a speaker, Constance Cumbay, Barrett Schoes, Michael Shaw with Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. It's going to be a great lineup. Now, of course, we have to know you're coming. We're serving lunch. Give us a call of 1-800-544-8927 if you're interested in taking a hotel room here, while we're going to line up a block of hotel rooms there at the G-Clip Inn in Aptos, and so that it will be cheaper than if you went out and got them on your own. But we hope many of you can come to our annual Radio Liberty Conference. We put this on every year, and hopefully next year we'll have it on Saturday, but this is the best meeting room we can get, and I think you'll find it a fascinating experience. I want to mention we are carrying emergency food, because we think that everybody should be supplied, and if you get them to us, of course, it helps Radio Liberty, and you'll be shipped directly from the factory. Give us a call if you'd like a food catalog, emergency food catalog. We're also carrying health products. All of these things, of course, we need to maintain the base we have with almost 60 outlets every single week. And so if you'd like to get any of this information, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Pardon me, 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope many of you, if you have not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, will want to get it. To understand the spiritual fight that we're in, let me suggest that the book Hostage to the Devil by Malachi Martin, a book that I read back in 1980, my wife and I read, and began to be introduced to the other dimension, because, ladies and gentlemen, there is a spiritual dimension out there. That, of course, there are mediums, there are diviners, there are fortune tellers. Many of them are quacks, but some of them really are able to access the other dimension. And, of course, until you understand that, it's so difficult to understand much of what's going on in the world today. The supernatural things, some of them phony, but some of them are very, very real. But, of course, they come from the other dimension. So, Hostage to the Devil, excellent book. The Beautiful Side of Evil by Johanna Michelson. We have interviews with Malachi Martin. We call it The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. We have interviews with Johanna Michelson in the Supernatural 4-tape set. All of these and so many other things. Diary of a Devil Hunter is a very, very good book. A man who is deeply involved in Satanism and then was able to come out, and he goes around the country trying to educate people. And the FBI comes right after him and saying, there are no satanic crimes in America. Forget about Richard Ramirez and Charlie Manson and, of course, David Berkowitz, the son of Sam. There are no satanic crimes. Why would the FBI be doing that? There's so much information you're not getting out. You'll find it here at Radio Liberty. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is R2 Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you of the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, of course, our views of our callers. We'll ask you to hold your calls until we ask for them, but our guest this evening is David Hodges. We're going to be talking about, well, so many of the things that are going on today that reflect this effort to control the minds and reality of our people, some of the mental health screening programs that are being used. Oh, a part of No Child Left Behind. We're here from the government, from the federal government. We just want our students to do better. And you look and see how they're doing, and they're doing worse and worse. How could you do such a poor job unintentionally? David is, of course, he teaches, I believe, psychology. He teaches history. Am I right on that, David?
Hi, Stan. I teach psychology, history, and statistics, and I'm a basketball coach.
All right, fine. Well, that keeps you pretty busy. But I appreciate you taking the time out to be with us this evening. So you pick up the story of the things that you think are so important for our listeners to hear.
Well, I think we're at a real crossroads in the history of our country. And let me just back up to 3 years ago, and I was just kind of fat, happy, and lazy, going to work, doing my thing, enjoying my new house, and I was involved in an eminent domain action against myself and 2,000 of my neighbors, and it woke me up to how government was really working, or should I say not working. And as I opened one door and didn't like what I saw, I opened two more doors and so forth. And then the next thing I know, Stan, I'm writing a book. I've got an editorial column on freedomsphoenix.com, and I guess I've become a political activist, and my main goal in this is not to bring, you know, attention or glory or fame or money to myself. I have a 5.5-year-old son, and I'm really worried about the country he's going to inherit. I almost feel like his heritage is destroyed before he gets a start in life, and my sole purpose in my work is to wake America up to what's happening, and hopefully collectively we get a chorus of voices going, and we promote a counter-critical mass, and we take our country back from those who are using it for their own purposes.
Well, I think that that's what motivated me some 44 years ago when I got started as well. And I had a son who was about 5 or 6 or 7 years old at the time. Anyway, you pick up this story, and what have you found as you become a political activist, as you begin looking behind the veneer, because everything is a veneer. Really, first, the media is used to keep the American people in line, to keep them fat and dumb and happy. Well, they're not, of course, not quite as happy as they used to be, because more and more people are having economic problems, and a lot of people are concerned about our economy, but they're sure dumb and fat, increasing obesity. Go ahead, and what have you found as you begin to look behind the mask at what's really going on?
Well, if I were to answer your question with a broad stroke, I would say that the United States of America is under invasion from two different sources. And actually, the players behind the scenes, the puppeteers, if you will, are one and the same. But we're looking in our country that we're becoming what I like to call a corporatocracy. We are seeing the extreme marriage between government and business, and government is increasingly becoming the broker of the multinational corporations, particularly businesses like the pharmaceuticals and the oil industry. And we have a system of political corruption that's basically, the banner is legal bribery. We call it campaign donations. And these people are trying to separate the American people from as much of their money as possible. Corruption rules the day in terms of unbidded contracts, payoffs under the table, and so forth. The second invasion, as I'm seeing, what I like to call the second wave, is even more insidious. It's coming out of the United Nations. And in 1992, President Clinton created something called the Presidential Council on Global Sustainability, and it's basically been a conduit for UN programs directly into the United States. And we're seeing this in education, land rights. We've even changed our system of law to a large degree. If you've noticed, our Supreme Court is beginning to cite the opinions of European judges in many of their decisions. And if I could take a moment and explain that, I'd like to, because we used to be a country totally based on the Constitution, meaning that you and I and the listening audience had inalienable rights that government could never take away. We are increasingly moving towards a system called communitarian law, which means that we have rights, but government grants them and government can take them away, and you only have your rights as long as it's in the common, or as I like to say, the communist interest. And we're increasingly seeing these Supreme Court rulings come in, and I'll give you one example of this, the Kelo versus New London, Connecticut eminent domain case of June of 2005, which allowed the city of New London to confiscate people's private property and to sell it to one of their political campaign backers, a real estate developer, for the total sum of $1. And under the Fifth Amendment, that's highly unconstitutional, but not in the way that the law is being applied today. So to kind of sum up in my long-winded answer here, what I have found in a very broad stroke is we're being invaded from within by our own homegrown multinational corporations, from the takeover of government and the abuse of power that's taken place, and we're seeing a takeover from the UN where we're basically UNizing the United States of America into a communitarian system of justice.
And, of course, a corporate, a state is really a fascist state, and this is the direction we're headed, and it's been there for a long period of time. It's just becoming increasingly obvious today. But these are not necessarily American corporations. They're international corporations. In fact, there was a book a few years ago called When the Corporations Rule the World. And there is an interlock between corporations and government, and what do? We see the new Secretary of the Treasury, a man named Mr. Paulson, and of course Mr. Paulson is gave up a $40 million job, a $40 million a year job to become Secretary of the Treasury at $180,000 a year. Does anybody believe he did that because of altruism? Of course not. Simply Goldman Sachs will be now, of course, running the Treasury Department here and using it to benefit them, just as when Robert Rubin from Goldman Sachs was the Secretary of the Treasury, why he used his position to lend money to Mexico so they could pay it back to Goldman Sachs for the money that they had borrowed. And, of course, it was for benefit of Goldman Sachs, not for the benefit of Mexico, and certainly not for the benefit of the average American. We'll be back in just a moment with Dave Hodges on what's going on. Well, I understand. David Hodges is really talking about, is concerned about the corporatocracy or communitarianism, or I like to talk about the corporate socialist state, which is what fascism is about, or feudalism, or cause of what you will, but we're really getting away from Americanism, getting away from the concept that the power of government was to be restricted by the change of the Constitution. And now, of course, the power of government is to be used to advance the financial advantages of the wealthy as we move towards a two-tiered society like they have in Mexico, the very rich and the very poor. And I think this is going to be increasingly an element, and I think this is exactly what they plan. So you pick the story up, David.
Well, I totally agree with you. And what you said right before we went to that brief station break, we are a fascist state. I prefer the term corporatocracy because when we use the word fascism, sometimes it turns people off and they don't hear the message. But when you do have the marriage between corporations and government, that is exactly and precisely the definition of fascism. And you're right about the polarization of wealth that's going on in our country. Today in America, even Robert Reich, Clinton's former Secretary of Treasury, acknowledges this. We have 1% of the population in this country that controls 40% of the wealth. And real wages since 1979 for the middle class are down about 20%, which is why we're seeing an increasing level of debt load. What do we have, an $8 trillion credit card debt? And we're seeing people now starting to work at two and three jobs just to try to keep their heads above water. And we're going to see an increasing number of these people sink below the poverty level as the throes of CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, kick in. You know, I almost have to laugh, Stan, as we come up on the midterm elections here, and it seems like the number one issue is going to be illegal immigration. It's either that or the war. And illegal immigration is a drop in the bucket compared to what's happening with CAFTA. We're going to see legalized guest workers, people now that we call illegal migrants, legalized guest workers coming to this country by the tens of millions. And under CAFTA, there are no minimum wage or worker protections. We're going to see sweatshops on American soil with people working below minimum wage. Now, in America, what that's going to mean for our kids, those who get very well educated and are very talented, work very hard in their field, and are in favor with the corporate elite, will be the managers of these hordes of people that will be coming to America, and they'll probably do quite well. But for the vast number of kids that just kind of meander their way through high school, the GED crowd, the people who really don't establish themselves professionally and achieve academic credentials, they're not going to work their way up the corporate ladder. They're not going to retire with a gold watch. They're going to be working in the same sweatshops as migrant labor. You're going to see multiple American families living in the same house at or below the poverty level. And this is what lies in our future with what the New World Order crowd is doing to us. The trade agreements is just the first part of this. But we're going to see immigration like we haven't seen on an unparalleled scale. I had a conversation with Congressman Tancredo's staff the other day, and we were talking about projected numbers from the CAFTA hordes that are going to be coming here, and particularly if we get the FTAA out of that as well, the Free Trade of the Americas, which is destined to follow. He has, Tancredo's staffers told me, he really feels that we could see a population increase in this country with combined birth rate and immigration due to guest worker programs by the year 2050. We might see as many as 600 million people in this country. And let your imagination run wild and ask yourself, what kind of infrastructure are we going to need to build to support this? Where is the tax money going to come from? And we are going to see, you said feudalism. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, feudalism might be a more accurate descriptive term of what's coming to America financially than fascism, because feudalism implies that you live on the land and die on the land that you were born on, but you don't own the land. You really don't reap the benefits of your labor beyond your own subsistence. And this is what lies ahead for a good number of our kids.
And I think it's really a rather sad commentary, but ladies and gentlemen, this is exactly what we're going to have, unless, of course, we can take America back. And, of course, I believe in a free enterprise system, but we do not have a free enterprise system. We have corporations that buy the support of the government and use the government for their own benefit. And you don't think that they pay the same taxes we saw here recently. You know, the individual who's making a fair amount of money pays up to 36%, but they had a little something in the tax law so that the corporations could keep their money overseas without paying taxes on it. You and I couldn't, of course, but they could. And then to entice them to bring it back in, why, we let them pay just a 5% tax. That, of course, is a result of the fact we have in Washington, D.C. today some of the finest politicians that money could buy, who are bought and purchased by our corporations, and this goes up to the very highest levels of our government. It's time we had people there represented the public rather than special interests.
Yeah, how do we do that? That's really the $64 question, isn't it?
Well, that's why we have you here with us tonight to make some suggestions.
Well, we're actually having our primary here in Arizona, and I didn't quite catch your intro. I didn't hear it as I was waiting on the phone, but I live here in Arizona, and I don't know if you mentioned that, and we have our primary elections tomorrow. Following the primary, we're actually launching a website, and I'm saying we as some colleagues and myself. It's called tossthemall.com, toss and then themall.com. And basically what it is, it's an anti-incumbent website, and it reflects a theme that I'm carrying in to the election year here. There are basically two people in Congress that I would vote for if I lived within their voting boundaries, and that would be Tom Tancredo of Colorado and Ron Paul of Texas. And as far as I'm concerned, we need to toss the rest out.
Well, don't forget Roscoe Bartlett. He's all right, too. He's
okay. I'm invariably going to leave somebody out here who really does deserve to be reelected. Here in Arizona, we have the best politicians that money can buy. In fact, really, our system of politics here in Arizona resembles more of a bordello than it does an honest political system. And one of the things that we can do to slow down the grand designs of the New World Order for our country, because, you know, to have this New World Order, people say, well, what has to happen? Well, you cannot have an outstanding country with extreme constitutional liberties, and we are extreme compared to the world standards in terms of our freedoms. And you can't have a country that's head and shoulders above everybody else economically. Socialism is the only way that this introduction to the system will work. So America needs to be chopped down to size. And for us to slow down the plans of the New World Order to basically give America away to make us like Mexico and Canada on equal footing, we need to unelect every incumbent politician unless we know precisely where they stand, and they stand with the Constitution. This won't stop the New World Order crowd, but at least will buy us time because it will slow them down. These people like the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and so forth that need to come in, and they buy off our local politicians like the John Kyles and the John McCains, to mention a couple here in Arizona. They need their continuity of office from term to term to term. And if we can come in and toss most of them out, then we've severely put a crimp in their plans in terms of continuity of implementation of their New World Order plans.
Right.
And I really believe
you
need to be in Congress for about two or three terms until you really have a foothold in there enough to be bought off.
Chris, what are the chances? Are either one of either McCain or Kyle running this time?
John Kyle is currently running.
All right, fine. Well, I hope that you can retire him so that he can spend his latter days, contemplating his sins.
Well, I wrote a pretty scathing editorial on John Kyle about 2 weeks ago. It's up on freedomsphoenix.com, and people can go to the main page and click on editorials and scroll down. And what they would find, in a nutshell, on John Kyle, and he's a prototypical senator. I mean, he's not out of the ordinary. He's bought and paid for. Let me give you an example. He sponsored legislation that gave Exxon a $6.5 billion tax break at the same time he owned stock in Exxon. Following the implementation of his new tax break plan, Exxon rewarded him with an additional $9,000 campaign donation. He's taken over $250,000 in this election cycle from the oil companies to get reelected. He's bought and paid for by oil and by the pharmaceuticals. You know, we have one of the worst healthcare systems in the world, despite the fact it's the most expensive. And John Kyle is the senator who repeatedly leads the way in basically tort reform that prohibits malpractice lawsuits.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I think that I hope that you are successful. What sort of a movement is there in Arizona? Is there growing awareness of what's going on, or are you simply tilting at windmills?
That's a good question. To give you my own background here, I'm a disaffected Republican. You know, I was raised pretty much a Republican. I voted Republican for most of my adult life until I realized how corrupt the one-party system is. And we have one party. I call it the Washington Party, and we have the Democratic wing, and we have the Republican wing. And I don't like what's happened to the Republican Party. So I changed parties, and I joined the Constitution Party, which just came to Arizona. Now, I'm sure that you're aware of the party to some degree. You know, Chuck Baldwin's a member. The party's new here in Arizona, and we hope by 2010 to have that party up and running to where we're actually running candidates. In fact, I'm actually the state party chair for the Constitution Party. The party is based on the notion that all we need to do to restore sanity to this country is to follow the rule of law and to follow the Constitution. And it's a strict constructionist point of view for the Constitution, which basically says that if the Constitution doesn't permit you to do it, then you shouldn't, and which is an idea right out of Thomas Jefferson. Is there a growing awareness in Arizona? That's a very good question. Arizona's predominantly Republican, and most people still go to the polls in this state and mindlessly vote the Republican ticket.
Well, then the only way this is going to change is to be able to find a vehicle for actually reaching them. This is the thing.
Well, this is one of the reasons I go on shows like yours, and I write an editorial column on freedomsphoenix.com, and why I have another website. It's based on property rights, called acppr.org. I'm trying to do my best to wake people up. You know, I don't pretend that I have all the answers, but I don't even think most people today see the problem, and I don't know that they're going to see the problem until the wolf is at their door.
Well, I think that the wolf is coming very, very soon, and it may be the very best thing that can happen. People become concerned when, of course, their ox gets gored. And, well, we've actually got three Christian stations. We do a program on there in Arizona every Saturday, and we really need to get into Phoenix. So that's the major concentration. Maybe one day we'll be able to. But the important thing, I think, is education. We've got to get people educated. We've got to get people concerned. We've got to get people dedicated to the point where they're willing to get up out of their chair and get involved along with you. We'll be back in just a moment with Dave Hodges to continue this conversation and welcome your calls. Well, David, certainly I applaud exactly what you're doing and your efforts there, and I think it's basically so vitally important to try to reach the people. And I do feel that there's an increasing awareness that something's wrong. It's just that the people don't quite know where to go. I think that the polls that show almost between 39 and 42% of the public do not believe the government's story of what happened on 9/11. They're beginning to question what they're being told by the media. I think that's the most exciting thing that's ever happened, you know, in many, many years, don't you?
Yes. In fact, I just wrote a column that aired today on 9/11, and I raised 14 points in my article that I want the government to answer before I accept the official version, because the official version's filled with nonsense physics and nonsense engineering. And I read a poll today that said 41% of Americans don't believe the government on 9/11. And I think for good reason. I'll give you one example. The plane that hit the Pentagon, we know that there are 5 videotapes from neighboring businesses like the Hyatt, and the government refuses to release those videotapes. Now, if we're a democracy, we have to operate in the open. We have to operate in the public view. And if we're supposed to accept the 9/11 Commission findings, then the American people should be able to look at these records. After all, we pay for them.
Well, of course, they did the same thing with the Oklahoma, the Murrah Building. And every time anybody wants to see the tapes that were taken from the Murrah Building back on August 19th, 1995, they're told, well, there's an ongoing investigation, so we can't let you see them. We don't want to take a chance on the criminals finding out what we know from those videotapes. Well, that's the most absurd explanation. I agree with you totally. There's so many unanswered questions, but the major thing is that more and more people are beginning to question, and they did not until recently. And the access to the Internet, the access to those videos that are up on the Internet, the video loose chains, why, of course, the other side is frantic with that one. And they're saying, why, don't even bother to go there. Don't waste your time watching loose chains. And ladies and gentlemen, you can actually go on the Internet and Google in loose chains, and you'll find a website. You can see it for nothing. I would look at it. I would evaluate it. I would watch it, and then I would watch some of these other websites that show you a Building 7 come down. Watch it come down about 5 times, and then decide, are you going to believe what the government tells you, or are you going to believe your lying eyes? Because that was a controlled demolition, don't you think?
Well, I think one of the effective things I saw in loose change was the fact that they showed that the Twin Towers came down at almost the rate of freefall. And given the massive tonnage of debris that each floor would accumulate as the building was pancaking and collapsing, I just don't find that to be believable. And you know, honestly, let's assume for the sake of argument and give the government the benefit of the doubt, Al-Qaeda or some other terrorist rogue organization gained access to these Twin Towers undetected, planted charges in the key parts of the building, and the building was demolition down and also response to the planes striking the buildings. Fine, then tell us. Prove it. It looks to me, you know, 9/11's beginning, in fact, my article took this point of view today. 9/11's beginning to look like and feel like the Warren Commission.
Like deja vu all over again.
No, it really seems that way. I mean, we're 38 years past the Kennedy assassination with regard to the 9/11 event, and it's like I'm hearing the same old worn-out excuses. Well, we're the government, trust us, and we don't have to show you everything.
And, of course, they sealed the records for the Warren Commission. They sealed the records for the 9/11 Commission. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is David Hodges, and we're talking about really what's going on in our society today and how we're losing our freedom. And, of course, David was simply pointing out that here and there in Arizona, they're hoping they're going to be able to mount a campaign and gradually get the people out of the one-party system that we have. But it's a matter of reaching the people. And, of course, we both agree that it's exciting that the polls show somewhere between 39 and 41 or 42% of the American people do not believe what the government has said about 9/11, which means that people are beginning to question what they read in the newspapers, hear on radio, see on television. They're beginning to get the picture we're being lied to. Well, we've got Leslie calling in from Virginia. Hi, Leslie. How are you tonight?
How are you, Dr. Monteith?
Doing fine.
I'm so glad to be able to speak to David as well. David, what I don't understand about the Constitution Party is that they don't have the North American Community Partnership. It's called SPP.gov. It stands for the Security Prosperity Partnership.gov. And I don't understand why they're not on the forefront on this, because Dr. Corsi has numerous articles on WorldNet Daily. He's the chairman of the Intelligence Committee on down, that, and others have denied this even exists when it does exist. And this could be push that you need. But the website needs to be... to address this issue, spp.gov.
All right, well, let's get David's response on that. And Leslie, you're absolutely right. I think this is such an important issue, and I know my friend Tom DeWeese has sent some material out on this. He said he mailed about 50,000 flyers. He said he has never gotten a response to anything he has put out in the last 20 years comparable to the response he got to the information on the Trans American Highway or the NAFTA Highway and SPP Security and Prosperity Partnership. Well, what do you have any thoughts on this at all, David?
Well, yeah, I'm very familiar with what Wesley's talking about. Essentially, what this leads into is what's called the North American Union, the NAU for short. And it was, in fact, Bush held a meeting at the Crawford Ranch, I want to say 6-8 months ago.
It was basically
Canadian officials were there, Vincente Fox, and they carved out the North American Union.
It's going to
be
an
appointed legislative body. But this is essentially what she's talking about. And then, Stan, you raised an interesting point that I'd like to address. You were talking about the highway system. You're speaking about the Canamex,
mm-hmm.
or as I like to call it here in Arizona, the McCainamex, because John McCain and Ted Kennedy were the co-sponsors of CAFTA, and that's what basically has ushered in the Canamex Highway. And the Canamex Highway is a system of 43 corridors that we're paying for. So these globalists, these international businessmen, have a free transportation system paid for by the American taxpayers that span the entire width and breadth of this country. And Stan, this is exactly what brought me into this work. I live in a small town north of the Phoenix area, about 20 miles north of Phoenix, and we had our land encumbered for a real phony baloney reason, and so did two other areas in the state. And we were told we were being encumbered to protect military bases and national security. Ended up being a bunch of nonsense. And what we found out was all three areas backed up against the Canamex Highway. They were trying to drive our property values down by condemning our property rights so we couldn't build, get a permit to do anything, couldn't sell our property, because they wanted to keep the acquisition cost of this Canamex Highway down. That's actually what brought me into all this, and I've been fighting this battle now with the state of Arizona and the federal government for about 3 years.
Well, now, Leslie points out that the Constitution Party doesn't have anything on the website about that. Do you know anything about that, or why are they emphasizing it?
They have nothing. What I want to make the point, the issue is that Congress is, they've got their head in the sand. They will not respond to the people. I have put this number out consistently. It's a toll-free number that they get a position from their representative where they stand on this issue. They refuse to respond, or if they respond, it has nothing to do with the question. And number two, the major media has for over a year and a half, this was signed March 23rd, 2005. They have yet to report on this. They are derelict from the most basic responsibilities to the American people that this has taken place. So this is where the Constitution Party comes out front. We will tell you. And what you do is you write letters to these congresspeople in Arizona, for starters, every single one of them, and you use that, their responses, which will be nothing or whatever it is. You put it up on the website. This is the result of an unaccountable elected officials that we have.
Do I have time to give her my website address?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Leslie, I'm also the spokesperson for the Arizona Coalition to Protect Personal Property Rights, ACPPR.org.
Give that one more time.
ACPPR.org.
Do you have any material up there on this?
I have a ton of material up there.
Hold it.
Okay, we'll come back to that after the break.
All right, David, go ahead. Get that website out there just one more time.
Okay, that's acppr.org. And I got to say, Leslie was a very astute caller. She's right on the money. My political party is very progressive, but they're behind the curve on this. They're against CAFTA. They're against the trade agreements. They say so right in the party platform, but they have not come out and formally opposed the North American Union.
Dave, I just want to say one thing.
And I've been pushing for them to do so. But if you do go up to acppr.org, Leslie, you'll see that I've been addressing the CAFTA, Canamex, Codex issues for the last 3 years.
Dave, this is a national issue for the Constitution Party because it was this program, and it was Dr. Monteith that told us that we're going to have a tribunal over top of a Supreme Court. We won't have a Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And our Bill of Rights are going to be thrown out. It was this program that told us about the Amero. It was this program that told us about the Social Security on down the list. And it was this program. I want you to be aware of that. The point is, we've got to get the information out.
We sure do.
I agree.
Thank
you. I
got
to tell you, I'm honored to be on this program because it is so progressive and because the truth is spoken here. And Stan, let me address the Amero for a second.
All right, go right ahead.
Leslie sounds like she's really on top of this. But
she's
for anyone else who might not quite be familiar with what she's talking about, what we're going to see, like the Euro out of the European Union, we're going to have the Amero. Here's the scary thing about the Amero. For the Euro to work, you had to have all the countries in Europe that belonged to the EU, they had to equalize their currencies, and there was a lot of teeth gnashing as this was going on, because a lot of sacrifices and a lot of people lost money. Essentially, this means this. The Canadian dollar, the American dollar, and the Mexican peso, at some point in time, have to all be equalized and standardized for the Amero to come into being. If that's not a scary thought enough to wake up the audience, nothing will be. And let me say that again. For the Amero and the North American Union to come into fruition, you have to have the American dollar equal to that of the peso. Now, people should ask themselves this question. Is it likely that the Mexicans are going to have an economic revival and catch up to the dollar? Or is it more likely there's a planned assault upon this country that's going to devastate this country economically that will bring us down to the level of the peso so world socialism can be ushered in? I think it's the latter.
Hannaford, right now people have to understand that the United States has to borrow $3 billion a day from other countries to keep going. I believe that Alan Greenspan has intentionally and maliciously destroyed the value of our currency by amassing massive debt that can never be repaid, with the full intention of destroying the economy of this nation and impoverishing our people, and we'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is David Hodges. And, David, I want you to get your website out again so that people will know how to get in touch with you and get your information.
Absolutely. Well, people like to read my column, and I run about two articles a week, and some of it's local Arizona politics, but some of it is national. That website is freedoms, with a plural, freedomsphoenix.com. That's the site I write for. The website where I think you can get a good portion of our information on regard to CAFTA, Canamex, and some of the issues that Leslie raised is at acppr.org. And I want to add, I think Leslie's criticisms of my party are valid. I've been trying to push our party to a higher level of awareness with regard to some of these international issues, and we are making progress. I just don't know that they're making it quite the campaign issue for the midterm elections that we should. I'm hoping by 08, when we get to the national elections, I'm hoping that my party will put these issues dead center in front of the voters.
Amen to that. Well, I certainly hope you're absolutely right. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Well, David, you were going to talk this evening a little bit about this mental health screening program.
Yes.
So would you like to get off into that? Because I think all of these are important issues. They all have to do with the government control of the minds of our people. In this instance, the mental health screening is government control of the minds of our children.
Yes. It's akin to what I think really we could call the Hitler Youth Movement, American style. And just a little more on my background, because people have actually asked me when I've written on this before, well, what qualifies you to write about this? Well, Stan, I'm a nationally certified mental health counselor, and I used to do drug and alcohol rehabilitation counseling as well as family counseling. I also teach research and statistics methods, so I knew a little bit about how studies are put together and the protocols that should exist. Now, having said that, back in 2002, in April, President Bush, by executive order, created something called the New Freedoms Commission on Mental Health. And what it was, by executive order, he ordered the compulsory mental health testing of all Americans. But like most draconian programs, it's going to be implemented in stages, you know, incrementally, one step at a time. And they want to start with our school children. And there are two programs that Americans should be concerned about that are moving lockstep together in accomplishing this goal. One program is called Teen Screen. And Teen Screen is a program that's made its way into several school districts. For example, in Illinois, under the Illinois Mental Health Act of 2003, Teen Screen is now in 23 Illinois counties. And it's growing in this country like, a cancer. So basically, this is the way Teen Screen works. At some point, it's going to be mandatory, but right now they're trying to entice children to come in and take what they call suicidal depression testing. And so they're going to screen kids for suicide by testing for levels of depression. Now, on the surface, to me, this sounds wonderful because our teenage suicide rate since 1968 is up over 300%. So this does seem to be a noble goal on the surface. But this program is conducted out of the public eye, and by that I mean the screening is done without parental notification. The screening also refers kids to another program called the Texas Medical Algorithm Project, TMAP, and it was actually something that George Bush developed when he was governor of Texas. And what TMAP does, it replaces older drugs like Haldol that are off of patent that you can buy for 8 cents a pill or $2.50 a month, and they replace them with drugs like Zyprexa, which sells for $2.50 a pill, or you're into the hundreds of dollars per month for your supply. And the side effects of Zyprexa and these more expensive antipsychotics are much greater. And particularly, the FDA has even said they're contraindicated for young minds. So back to the Teen Screen program, they screen these kids. And the screening instrument itself is an absolute joke, Stan. And I know how, you know, tests and screens should be put together. There are no measures of validity or reliability published on the screening instrument. I've called Teen Screen. I've asked them to prove that their instrument's valid. They refuse to do so. If it's a good program, it should be conducted in the light of day. And I was also able to get a hold of one of the Teen Screen instruments. And, for example, they're testing for depression by asking questions like this. When you've been in a group, have you ever felt lonely or anxious? Now, excuse me, Stan, but I must have been absent from school the day that I was taught in grad school that this was a sign of some kind of mental illness. The whole test is an absolute joke. They have an 84% false positive rate on testing for depression. And there's another standard flaw with this program, and that is that depression is not the primary indicator or precursor to suicide. It's hopelessness. And that was established by researchers like Aaron Beck back in the 1980s. And so Teen Screen program is not even testing for the number one predictor of teen suicide. They entice these kids to take these screening tests with the promise of pizza coupons and movie theater tickets. And once they get them in their clutches, then they get referred to TMAP for their most expensive medications that have terrible side effects. And this is soon going to be mandatory in all 50 states. Now, it's not here in Arizona yet. I've checked. I'm actually supporting one of our local candidates for state superintendent of public instruction. He is adamantly opposed to bringing it in, which is a good thing. But if you look at states like Oregon, Texas, North Carolina, Boston, Pennsylvania, they're all in there. I mean, Teen Screen is sweeping this country like a cancer, and it's a form of mind control. Kids, I mean, if they won't go with the flow, they're going to have their brains chemically castrated before they reach adulthood. They're going to have trouble getting health insurance, and parents are left out of the equation. And you probably are a step ahead of me on this, Dan. The components of this plan for Teen Screen have their roots and origins in the UN Mental Health Plan put forth by UNESCO. And it came into this country through the Presidential Council on Sustainability created by Clinton, ended up at Columbia University, where psychologist Lori Flynn put together this instrument. And I'm not sure if she had a bad day when she put together the instrument, but this thing is a scientific joke. and I'm trying to wake as many Americans up as I possibly can. And my advice to parents across the country is if the teen screen comes to your school, change your child's school. If your government in your state insists on chemically castrating the brain of your child, then homeschool your kid. And if they outlaw homeschooling, then we as Americans need to be ready to go to jail. I mean, because after all, what's the government going to do? Build a fence around the country and call it jail? You know, I got a news flash for Americans. George Bush, the NFC, and Big Pharma do not own your kids. And if you look at what the underlying motive here is beyond just simple mind control of the kids, the pharmaceuticals are raking in profits of unbelievable proportions, similar to what Halliburton has done in Iraq with regard to the war.
Well, of course, my concern is that these medications may have permanent effect on the children. We know that Ritalin, giving these children Ritalin, they stunts their growth. It affects their whole hormonal balance. And of course, there were some studies that were put out that even suggested that after they'd taken the Ritalin, they not only had stunted growth, they had smaller brains. This has a permanent effect. I mean, certainly these other pharmaceuticals that they're giving children have never been declared to be safe for our children. Why are we getting children in and taking them, first of all, into suicide classes and then learning all about death? And then we wonder why some of our children have a sense of hopelessness or agitation or fear. We've taken any knowledge of God out of the schools, so what are you going to depend on? Yourself? And then, of course, we will give them these tests. And, you know, tests can suggest ideas. A lot of kids have never even thought that they might feel ill at ease in a crowd, but now we've implanted that idea in their mind, and the next thing, we want to give them psychotropic drugs that have not been found to be safe. But all you need to do is go back and read Aldous Huxley's book, The Brave New World. And what was it all about? Why was it all about getting all of our children on medications? Who formed UNESCO? A man named Julius Huxley, Aldous Huxley's brother. And, of course, as David notes, this whole idea comes out of UNESCO. Could there be a coincidence, or is this simply part of a diabolical plan? And I personally believe these people know exactly what they're doing, and they want to destroy the minds of our children. These people know that these drugs, you know, have a permanent effect. Many of them are fluoride-based, and, of course, we know what the fluoride does as far as the brain and its function is concerned. In fact, so many of the medications, the psychotropic medications, have exactly the same fluoride base as so many of the very toxic substances that we've talked about on many of our other programs. So I share your concern, David. We need to get parents to realize that just because these people say we're here to help your children doesn't mean that's the case at all.
Well, I hope people, if they walk away from this program and take nothing else with them tonight, that they'll take the names Teen Screen and TMAP, the medicating agent, and realize it's nothing but a pharmaceutical scam that was cooked up by George Bush when he was governor of Texas, and it's designed to increase their profit margin while also controlling the children. And, you know, if I were to suggest a book, too, in addition to Brave New World, and that's an excellent example, Zygmunt Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages, The Technotronic Era, he outlines, you know, basically chemical control of population groups in much the same way that we're seeing it happen here. And the schools really were a brilliant place for George Bush to start, because we have 52 million school children and 6 million adult employees that walk through the doors on any given weekday, and you've encompassed 20% of the country right there in this program.
And I think this is a very, very dangerous situation. Yes, that book, it was written back in 1970. Between Two Ages, American, the Technotronic Age, is must reading for anybody who wants to understand so much of what's going on today. There's a tremendous amount of information that's there. And when you realize, of course, that Zygmunt Brzezinski says how wonderful Marxism is, he talks about the ability to be able in the future to control the weather, and to create storms and droughts, even the ability to create new chronic diseases to disable the enemy. And, of course, we have all these new chronic diseases here in America. Nobody knows where Lyme disease came from. Nobody knows where chronic fatigue syndrome came from.
The Hantavirus.
Yep. Of course, nobody knows where AIDS or Ebola or Marburg disease came from. They just sort of came. we know where they came from because the government, we have the testimony from Dr. David MacArthur before the House Appropriations Committee in 1969. If anybody would like to get copies of it, we have the complete text, or just you send you the one page for nothing, but we have the complete text where Dr. MacArthur asked for $10 million in 1969 to build create a new disease, a disease that has never existed before, for which there will be no immune response. And he says, some people say we should not do this because it would be another or form of mass killing. But we want to go ahead and do it anyway. Another form of mass killing. And then the other thing is, of course, he wanted money to create these chronic diseases for which there'd be no cure, and the people would just simply be chronically disabled. I think that, we certainly got our money's worth. Anyway.
You know, there's people out there, Stan, that think they can just sit by and it's not going to affect them. And I'd like to address that for a second. If you read Prince Philip's book or you look at what Jacques Cousteau was saying in his final days, a lot of these New World Order groupies are saying the same thing, that they need to reduce the population by 90 to 95%. And whether it's going to be through a super plague or nuclear war or whatever, I mean, when you see enough of these people, the global elite, saying the same thing, that they'd like to come back as a virus and wipe out 90% of mankind, which is what Prince Philip said, we need to sit up and take notice.
In fact, it was really somebody called me earlier this morning to tell me that 10 of the highest placed people in the Centers for Disease Control had just quit their jobs, and 5 of them had moved out of the country. And the question was, what do the men at the top scientists of the CDC know that the rest of us don't know? And why would they want to leave the United States and go to Africa and other places like that? Or maybe they do know something about what lies ahead. Just conjecture. But, of course, there is an article in the Washington Post within the last 2 weeks talking about a secret laboratory at Fort Meade, Maryland, total violation of all the treaties that we've signed, where they're creating horrible new diseases. And the reason we're doing it is because somebody else might do it. And these are diseases that are in violation of all the treaties we've signed. If they ever got out of the laboratory, they would kill millions of people, and many people are very concerned about it. Anybody would like to see this Washington Post article, we'd be glad to make it available to you. Not a word in the rest of the media. I can't help but wonder why.
Well, I can tell you why. The media is controlled by 6 corporations and the people that lie behind them. And so you're essentially getting the same scripts, whether it's NBC, ABC, or CNN. And it takes shows like this to get the word out to the people. And that's one of the reasons why I agreed to come on your show. There are radio stations, for example, the Clear Channel Variety, that I won't go on because I'd probably be on them one time and they'd censor me. well, they, as I like to say, they'd Dixie Chick me, which, you know, they banned the Dixie Chicks. We actually have a talk show host here locally in Phoenix. His name is Charles Goyette. And to show you about media control, Charles was the number one talk show host in Phoenix when the war broke out against Iraq. He was on KFYI, a Clear Channel Communication, and this guy's ratings were going through the roof. And he came out in opposition to the war. He accused Bush of cooking the books, which now we know he did, to make his case for the war. Well, they took him off prime time, and they stuck him on nighttime because he had a 3-year contract, and they ran him into the ground. They ruined his ratings with his time slot. And then when his contract was over, he was blackballed from all Clear Channel Communications. Now he works on an independent station here in Phoenix. And the rates since he's joined the station are going through the roof. I mean, people want to hear the truth. The truth that's spoken on this show, the truth that's spoken on Clear Channel, our Charles Goyette show. But when you have the Clear Channels and some of these other media moguls, they prevent the truth from coming out because it doesn't serve their corporate agenda.
You're absolutely right. And, of course, people have to begin to understand that there are only a very, very small number of sources where you can still get the information. There certainly are some people on shortwave, some people on the Internet. You know, there's so much disinformation that is intentionally being put out. And I would like to say, and I hate to say this because I'm an evangelical Christian, but some of the Christian networks are putting out information that is frankly fallacious, and they will not allow allow the truth to be put forward. This is what really disturbs me. Now, I happen to be on some Christian networks that do an excellent job, and I certainly congratulate them for it. At least they allow me to stay on there, which and I would hate to think what would happen if I wasn't allowed to, because this is really my largest audience is a conservative Christian stations. They may not agree with everything I say, but they allow me to say it, and we'll continue saying it, because I'm not going to get on the radio and put things out that would be popular with others. I'm going to tell the people the truth. Well, our guest this evening has been Dave Hodges, and Dave, I want to thank you for being with us. And
it's been my pleasure.
We're going to have just a little break here. I'm going to let you have a couple of minutes to sort of wrap up the program, but certainly your information on this mental health screening, I think, is teen screen is so vitally important. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, once you've taken these tests, they're going to find a reason to put your child under psychotropic medication. And a lot of this psychotropic medication may sound very benign, but of course your child may never, never, never recover from the disastrous effects. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program with Mr. David Hodges. Well, David, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I want to thank you, first of all, for having me on, because, and I mean what I say, Stan, it shows like this could have a chance of waking up the American people. I'm writing a book that's going to be released in February, March, and I would have it done sooner, except, you know, I'm starting college basketball season now. We've actually begun practice, and I could not do the tours I need to do if I was coaching at the same time. And I'm doing this not to make money and not to bring glory to myself, and I write my column on freedomsphoenix.com for the same reasons. I'm doing it so someday, I think, when my five-year-old is old enough to understand what his dad's involved in, he'll say, well, at least my dad tried to make a difference, and he tried to say what was right and what was wrong and stand up for what's supposed to be right in this country. And that's really my motivation for doing this. I'm scared to death that we're not going to wake up enough people in enough time to reverse this. You know, if you look at what the grand designers have in effect, I think the critical time is between 2010 and 2014. When you look at CAFTA, the FTAA, and the North American Union, and what their timetables are, that doesn't give us a whole lot of time to wake up the American people. And if we don't wake them up in the next couple of years, it may be too late, and we're going to lose our American way of life forever. You know, I wrote an article today, like I said, on 9/11, and I said, where were you when, you know, Kennedy was killed? Where were you for 9/11? And I concluded the article by saying, someday if we don't do something, your children might look at you and say, where were you, Daddy, when we lost our liberties and our country?
Well, I think it is a noble quest that you're involved in, because we're truly involved in an epic struggle, for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And but I really, in many ways, I'm more encouraged than I've been. I've been at this for a long time, David. I've been at this for 44 years now. And, you know, but I see the polls are showing that people are beginning to question. We look up in the Internet, we see all these websites that show those buildings coming down, and you watch those come down a few times, and you have to make one choice. You're going to believe what the government says, what Time and Newsweek, ABC, CBS, NBC say, or are you going to believe your lying eyes?
Yeah.
And I think an awful lot of people are believing their lying eyes and realize we've been lied to. And as more and more people begin to question the media, at that point we're going to be able to take America back. Anyway, God bless you. Thank you so very much, and I really would love to get you back on some of our other programs.
Feel free to call on me anytime. I've really enjoyed this, and God bless you and your program.
Thank you so very much.
Okay, good night.
Good night, God bless. Okay, well, that's David Hodges. I hope you've enjoyed the program, and I'd like to have David back here as a regular. He's articulate, he's intelligent, he understands what the problem is, and with his help and with God's help, we're going to have an awful lot of impact right here in America. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And so if you'd like to join, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and then, of course, you'll get our four best tapes of the month, you'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be helping us as we reach out across America with the news that you're not going to get elsewhere. And then, of course, we want to remind all of our listeners that we are going to be having our annual Radio Liberty Conference here on the 29th of October. We're going to have great speakers, Constance Cumby, Chris Pinto, who wrote and produced the video, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. And, of course, we'll have Barrett Schoes, we'll have Michael Shaw. So, because you're going to have to get your reservations in. And, of course, we're hoping to have a sellout crowd. We're going to be serving lunch, so you have to have a reservation. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you need rooms, let us know. And then, of course, we mentioned we are beginning to carry food products just because I'm very, very concerned. We may very well move into an emergency situation. So if you'd like a food catalog, we'll send you one. If you'd like a health products catalog, and those health products are the vitamins and minerals and the other things that you need, like CoQ10 and quercetin and oil of oregano and the allobiotic, which is a natural antibiotic pill that has oil of elderberry juice and has the oil of oregano and the echinacea so many of the things that you really would need. So anyway, we ask you to, if you're interested in getting our health catalog, list of books and other items we carry, and we do carry the big Berkey items. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Bob from San Jose is calling, but I'll just ask him to stay on the line. We're not going to have time to talk to him on the air, but we'll be glad to talk to him off the air. Then, of course, we want to mention also that if you'd like to get our regular catalog, we'd be glad to send it to you. If you have not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. If you want to understand why Cuba went communist, if you want to understand the world revolution that began with America's revolution and is still continuing to this very day, you need to get our video, The World Revolution, and you'll actually see there an interview I did back in 1980 with the American ambassador to Cuba, where he tells you how we brought Fidel Castro to power. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Fidel Castro was never the enemy. We brought him to power. We've kept him in power. And you see one of the greatest charades of all time, the American opposition to Castro, despite the fact that about 77,000 people have died trying to escape from the dictatorship that was established by your government. And then, of course, what's even more startling is the realization that David Rockefeller's daughter is a very close friend of Fidel Castro. Why would David Rockefeller's daughter be an admirer and friend of Fidel Castro? If you doubt it, you need to get the book Memoirs by David Rockefeller, which we carry. That's Memoirs by David Rockefeller. You need to get the video World Revolution to understand how they're poisoning your children with water fluoridation. You need the video. It's called The Hidden Agenda, and of course, there's a syllabus goes with that. To understand what's happening financially, you need the Financial Tsunami. It's a video and a VHS and a DVD, either one of them, and the syllabus. And then, of course, you want to understand the Iraq War. Well, of course, you have to understand all the wars before that. So we have a video. It's called Iraq, The Untold Story. And with that comes a syllabus that has all sorts of information you'll never get elsewhere. And you'll have all the documents right in your hands. That and so much other information is available from Radio Liberty. Remember, you can listen to us 5 hours a day on the Internet, 4 hours a day on the shortwave, 9 hours a day on satellite. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Our website, radioliberty.com, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 9/11 fifth year anniversary. It is so sad to watch what is taking place on television and the pain on the lives of those that have been drugged through all of this 5 years ago have to be reenacted over and over again. And why? To reinforce the lie. That's what it's all about. 9/11, reinforcing the lie. Today, the exploitation of 9/11 can